is December 6, 2015, in Chennai, India, Bhakti Riksha program. I'm a reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 1. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Maya Shakta Mana Partha,
Maya Shakta Mana Partha,
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha,
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha,
Asam Shayam Samabrahmam,
Asam Shayam Samabrahmam,
Yatagnas Yasitach Trinu, Yatagnash Yasi Tach Trinu Yatagnas Yasi Tach Trinu Yatagnas Yasi Tach Trinu
Yatagnash Yasi Tach Trinu
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Maya Shakta Mana Partha
Maya Shakta Mana Partha
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha
Asam Shayam Samagrammam
Asam Shayam Samagrammam
Yatagnas Yasi Chach Trinu
Yatagnas Yasi Tachrinu
Anybody like to chant?
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Maya Sakta Mana Partha
Maya Sakta Mana Partha
Yogam Yunjan Madashraya
Yogam Yunjan Madashraya
Asham Shayam
Samagrammam
Yata Nyasya Sita Shuno
Yata Gnasya Sita Shuno
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Maya Shakta Mana Partha
Maya Shakta Mana Partha
Yogam
Yunjat Madashraya
Asham Shayam Samagrammam
Asham Shayam Samagrammam
Yada Yajnasi Dashrunu
Yata Yajnasi Dashrunu
Maya Shakta Manapat Shri Bhagavan Vacha
Shri Bhagavan Vacha
Maya Shakta Manapat
Maya Shakta Manapat
Yogam Yunjat Madashraya
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayam
Shayam Samagrammam
Asham Shayam Samagrammam
Yada Jnasi Yasi Dashrunu
Yata Jnasi Dashrunu Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The Supreme Lord said.
The Supreme Lord said.
Maye.
Maye.
To me.
To me.
Ashakta Manaha.
Ashakta Manaha.
Mind attached.
Mind attached.
Partha.
Partha.
Osanaprita.
Osanaprita.
Yogam.
Yogam.
Self-realization.
Self-realization.
Yunjan.
Yunjan.
Practicing.
Practicing.
Madashrayaha.
Madashrayaha.
In consciousness of me, Krishna consciousness.
In consciousness. Of me, Krishna consciousness.
Asham Shayam.
Asham Shayam.
Without doubt.
Without doubt.
Samagram.
Samagram.
Completely.
Completely.
Mam.
Mam.
Me.
Me.
Yata.
Yata.
How.
How.
Gnashyasi.
Gnashyasi.
You can know.
You can know.
Tut.
That.
That.
Shinu.
Shinu. Try to hear.
Try to hear.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said.
Supreme Personality of Godhead said.
Now hear, O Son of Pritha.
Now hear, O Son of Pritha.
How by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me.
How by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me.
With mind attached to me.
With mind attached to me.
You can know me in full free from doubt.
You can know me in full free from doubt.
Purport. In the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. So Prabhupada there is giving a little summary of what's coming in the chapter. In the first 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. Now, Prabhupada's giving the summary of the first six chapters because the Bhagavad Gita can be divided, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, into three groups of six. So the seventh chapter is starting a new section. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahmajyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahmajyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna the Supreme is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, touch Janu, or hear from him. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education. That doesn't mean that devotees can't have any academic education. It means if one has only academic education, that's not enough. One has to have also devotion. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Now this section is very important that Prabhupada's quoting. This is giving the whole progress of bhakti, the way of understanding how one progresses in bhakti. Srinvatan Swakita Krishna Panyashravana Kirtana Vidyantastra Bhadrani Vidyanoti Sutsitam Nasta Parayashiva Bhadrashu Nityam Bhagavati Tevaya Bhagavat Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtaki Tadar Rajasta Chobha Timo Bhava Kamalo Bhasayastaye Cheta Ete Aranavidam Stitam Satve Prasiditi Evam Prasama Manaso Bhagavat Bhakti Yogita Bhagavat Tatta Vidyana Mukta Sangasta Jayate Vidyate Vidya Gramtis Chintate Sarva Samsayaha Shiyante Chasti Karmani Drista Evat Manishwari. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures, or to hear about him directly through the Bhagavad Gita, is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best-wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lust and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, Bhakti Yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of a samsayam samagram, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam 1.2.17.21. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. Maya Shakti Manaparta Yoga Munyan Marashraya Asam Sayam Samadramam Yatta Gnastra Sitach Chunu. So here Krishna is making the point. Maya Shakta. Shakta means attachments. And generally, we think of spiritual life means we don't have any attachments. Unattached. Detached. Just sort of floating. We think of moksha like that. You're freedom from everything. That makes sense, right? An attachment means something that's holding you. Literally. That's what an attachment means. So, I can only float in the sky if I can only be free if I have no attachments. So here Krishna is saying, be attached to me. Have your mind
attached to me.
So this is very interesting. That is because bhakti is really about positive more than negative. The negative is a natural result of the positive. We're not simply interested in negative. You know, if you're really suffering, you may just think about the negative. Right? Whenever we're really sick, everybody's been really sick sometime. And all you're just thinking about is make the pain go away. You're not even thinking about positive life. You're just thinking, if you're in a lot of pain, you're just thinking that make the pain, make it go away, go away, go away. But after the pain goes away, you want positive life, right? You don't just want to lie in bed with no pain. You want to get up and do something in healthy life. So the reality is also, are you going out?
10 minutes.
The reality is also a world of attachment. That's what's so astonishing. It's not attachment in and of itself that's our problem. It's what we're attached to. If you're attached to a kite, you can fly in the sky. Freedom doesn't mean no attachments. It means being attached to the right thing. If you're attached to one who's free, you're also free. You're attached to one who's happy, you're also happy. I mean, our attachments right now are to things which are cheating us. They're called fallible soldiers. Just like children sometimes have plastic soldiers. But your plastic soldiers can't help you. Sometimes I visit South Africa and there's a lot of crime there. So everything's, like here you have on your windows, these bars. So they also have bars on their doors. And they would never sit in the middle of the day with the door open. Never. They would not do that. Even I was staying at one person's house in South Africa, and I wanted to go sit in their garden. It was a house with no garden. So, and then around the garden there was a big wall, and on top of the wall there's razor wire and broken glass and things. So I just wanted to go from the house to the garden, between the house and the wall. But the door was locked, inside door with bars and 3 or 4 locks. So the housewife had to get out all these keys just so I could sit in the garden. And when I went out, she locked the door behind me also.
Not taking any chances.
And I thought, just if you want to go in the sun for 5, 10, you know, nobody's going to go in the sun even for 10 minutes because it's so much trouble just to go out of your house. So many people there also have dogs. It's very common that people keep dogs there. Sometimes 2 or 3 big dogs. Now here in India, you don't see many people keeping dogs, but when the Indians live in South Africa, they're keeping dogs. Not as pets, really. So I went to one person's house and he said, so we were robbed. Practically everybody there has some story of crime. Almost everybody has a crime story. Either their self or their father or somebody. And he said, yes, we were at home, and the thieves came, and the first thing they did was they poisoned our dogs. They put poison in meat, you know, and gave it to the dogs. So that's a fallible soldier. Then they turned off the electricity from the outside, so because they have electric fences, all that, and just cut through the wire, and they came in and took all their jewelry and... So they had so many barricades, so many protections. And I thought, what's the use of a dog? So much trouble to keep a dog. Why just pick up 2 or 3 dogs? Again, they bought dogs. So they had so much trouble to keep these dogs, and all the thief has to do is poison some meat, and the dogs are finished. But all of our material attachments are like this. Every one of them. Of course, starting with our own body. We're most attached to our own body, generally. But the body is the biggest fallible soldier. Our mind also. We're attached to our mind, our learning, our knowledge, our talents. You can't see me back there. Maybe I could sit. And I'm having to do this. I'm having to do this to my neck. And you're having...
Should I get a chair?
Yeah, why don't I sit in a chair?
Yeah.
There's a chair right
there. Yeah.
Just, yeah. I don't like sitting higher than everybody, but it's... Because I'm not any higher than anybody. But it's... I want to serve you nicely, so. Okay. There, that's better. Now I can see. Oh. Oh, very nice. And then, of course, oh, look at that. Everything, first class. Everything. Very good. Okay. And then there's our body, our mind.
Could you take a photograph, please?
Sure. So we're attached to, you know, what we know, our talents, our abilities, our memory, our experiences, our memories. And we're attached to our family and our friends. And then our possessions, our nice tablet, our watch. And what are we thinking? We're thinking all these attachments, that they're going to bring me happiness. I think my body's going to make me happy. I'll feed it, I'll clothe it, I'll take care of it, and it will give me pleasure. We think my mind's going to give me happiness. My family, my friends, my possessions are all going to bring me happiness. And then I also think they're all going to give me shelter. They're going to protect me. My body will protect, my mind will protect me. If there's any trouble, I can rely on my memory and my knowledge. And my family, my friends will protect me. Even if my body breaks, my mind breaks, my family will take care of me. My friends will take care of me. Or my possessions will take care of me. My home, my car. And unfortunately, though, none of these things can really give me happiness or protection. So we're constantly in anxiety. When will my body break? Not if, when. Yes, the body will definitely break in some way. It will get sick, it will get old, and it will die, for sure. That's absolutely for sure. And the mind also. Does the mind let us down? Sometimes we think bad thoughts, we forget things. We have unnecessary anxieties. And our family and friends, do they always bring us happiness and shelter? No, sometimes they are the greatest source of pain. Of course, sometimes we are the greatest source of pain for them. And sometimes the very people who you think will give you the best happiness will give you the most pain. If some stranger on the street says, "You are a fool," who cares? Your husband says that. Your child says that. It can bother you for the next, 20 years. And are they always there for us? No. They're not always there for us. You have a problem, you call your friends, your family, maybe they will help you, maybe they won't help you. Even if they want to help you, maybe they can't. Maybe they can't, yeah, they have their own limitations. I mean, when my father was dying, by the time they called us and said he was dying, and then we had to take like 2-3 hours to think, how are we going to get there? Are we going to take a car? Are we going to take a plane? Whose car are we going to take? What plane are we going to take? Who's going to go? That took maybe 2 hours. We got there, and he died 2 hours before we got there. We have our limitations. They said to him, "Oh, your daughter's coming," but I didn't get there. So even if they want to help, they may not be able to help. And sometimes they don't even want to help. And then, "Oh, I've given you so much. Now you take care of yourself." And our possessions, they may break. They may get stolen. They may not work. Right? Why isn't it working? Call the technician. Just put the factory reset on. Erase all your data. So these are not shelters. And therefore, we are advised, give up attachment to this. You know, what does attachment mean? Attachment means, this is where I'm going to find happiness and shelter. That's what attachment means. It's just like, I'm not attached to this house. I have zero attachment to this house. I don't think this house is my shelter. And I don't think this house is going to give me happiness. I don't identify with it. So when we say I'm attached, it means I'm thinking, this is where I'm going to find happiness and protection. In fact, if you want to define what is love, so I'm going to take a risk here because nobody can really define what is love. But anyway, if you want to define what is love, love can be, I see the good in you. I have appreciation for you. I find pleasure being in your company. I find pleasure thinking about you. I appreciate you. I admire you. I'm fascinated by you. Like the mother or father looking at their baby's toes. You know? I remember seeing this one mother. The baby was maybe 1 month old, so I'm sure she saw her toes many times. And still she's just there, you know, looking at the toes. So you find the other person fascinating and attractive. And then we can say love is also, they're very important. It matters. Like some people, I like them. I think they're nice people. I enjoy them. But whether they're here or they're not here, it doesn't matter to me so much. If I see them, it's nice. If I don't see them, it doesn't matter. But real attachment, it really matters. If they don't call you, your world is finished. No, they're important. They're meaningful to you. And the other is that you can depend on them and they can depend on you. You feel, this is someone I can lean on. Even if I'm in trouble, even if I really made a mistake. I remember one time I made a really big mistake with adding up some money. We were getting a job done at the school, and the person doing the work, he'd given two different ways of understanding the money. One was when we were going to pay it, what time, and the other was the total amount, and they didn't match. But I never checked to see if they matched. So I made a mistake. But the other people there, nobody got angry with me. Nobody said, oh, I was irresponsible. But nobody said, oh, you were irresponsible, you're this, you're that. Nobody. They said, oh, it's okay. Even though they also suffered. So that is also love. Someone that you can depend on when you're in trouble, even if the trouble is your own fault. Not someone's going to say, oh, it's your fault you're in trouble. Go find someone else. So we could say love is those three things. A feeling of fascination and attraction, a feeling of value and importance, and a feeling of dependence. But if we have that feeling of fascination, value, and dependence on something that's not really very fascinating, not really very valuable, and not really very dependable, then we're going to suffer. Does that make sense? Of course, every living entity is fascinating because it's part of Krishna. But just imagine how fascinating Krishna is. I mean, we can be fascinated by a little ant, you know? Yes? Just imagine how fascinating Krishna is. And if some other living being can be important to us, imagine how important God can be to us. And if we can depend on someone else a little bit at least, how much can we depend on God? But if we try to make something else into God completely, you are completely fascinating, you are completely valuable, you are completely dependable, then we're going to suffer. Even the people who are most important, is our life going to be finished if they die? No, not really. My father and I were very, very close. I loved him very much. And my life is going on. I miss him. I would like him to be here, but it's not like now I can't breathe, now I can't eat, now I can't work. So we have these kind of attachments, but they're not based in reality. They're not going to give us what we seek. And then we often get very angry at those other persons or at ourselves. We get angry at our body, we get angry at our mind, we get angry at our family and friends. It's a big reason why there's, you know, divorce. I thought you were going to be this, and now actually you're this.
Disappointment.
Huh? Disappointment, yes. I thought you were this, and actually you're this. Disappointment, grief, and fear. And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, then rebirth also. To do it all over again. Because the basic principle of attachment is still there. The basic principle of being attached to things that are just Krishna's energy has still remained. So someone may think, well, this woman wasn't, but this other woman would be. This man wasn't, this other man. And you see some people, they go, you know, 4, 5, 6. Right? Because the principle is still there. A different car. A different house. A different dog. Right? And basically what happens is we think, you know, okay, well, when I'm 5 years old, I think, well, when I'm 12, then I'll be happy. You remember that? Thinking that? And then when you're 12, you think, oh, when I'm 16, then I'll be happy. When I get into good college, then I will be happy. Oh, when I finally graduate from college, then I will be happy. When I get married, then I will be happy. When I have children, then I will be happy. When I get rid of this terrible husband, then I will be happy. When my children grow up, then I will be happy. You know, when I have a good job, then I will be happy. When I retire from my job, then I will be happy. And then finally at the end, you say, oh, I made so many mistakes. If only I could do it differently, then I would be happy. Krishna says, okay, another chance. Take another body, try to do it differently again. So this attachment, this material attachment, it's really awful. It's just really awful. And so we sometimes then think, okay, let me have no attachment at all. This is very much Buddhist philosophy. Also Sankaracharya's philosophy. So a little intelligent, you understand, the problem is not my body, my mind, my husband, my mother-in-law, my children, my employer, my government, my computer, my house, my stove. That's not the problem. The problem is my attachment to it. Just like there's problems in this house. Looks like they need a new paint job. But because I have no attachment to this house, it's not making me suffer. You understand? If I was attached to this house, then I would be suffering. Oh, I need to paint that wall. It's not the wall that's causing me suffering. It's my attachment to the wall. Is this clear to everybody?
The attachment of mine.
Yes. Well, yeah, you're jumping to the next step. Like I'm just a visitor. So I'm staying in a room at the temple. And it's a nice room, but I wouldn't have it be my room. If I was going to live there, I would make so many changes. I wouldn't leave it the way it is. But because it's not my room, I'm not thinking this room is the source of my happiness and my shelter. I don't feel attachment. And therefore, the problems in the room cause me very little suffering. So it's not the circumstances, it's the attachment. It's just like if you drive on the road and there's some accident and someone is lying on the street. You just say, oh, bad accident, and you keep driving. And if it's your mother on the street, then so much pain. Pain is coming from the attachment. So it's somebody else's mother. You know, you read in the newspaper, oh, this airline crashed and all these people died, and you say, oh, that's terrible. If it's your sister on the plane, why? Somebody's sister. So, some people figure out the problem is not the circumstances. It's not the circumstances. You can say, well, what about if my body's hurting? I cut my finger and there's pain. My dear friends, even that is attachment. Because we're not this body. And if you're not attached to the body, I'm going to tell you a little secret. You wouldn't even feel the pain. You'd know, but you wouldn't be feeling the pain. So many philosophers have understood the problem is attachment. They say, okay, stop all attachment. Then you stop all suffering. Very simple. simple idea. Very hard to do it. It's extremely hard to do. And we want happiness and shelter. Why should we have no happiness and no shelter? If you say, these are not sources of happiness and these are not shelters, so I have to live without happiness and without shelter? Is that very attractive? If my home needs to be painted, should I become homeless and live on the street? Is that my solution? If I say, well, I'm feeling pain because I need my walls painted. Oh, you want to get rid of your pain? Just get rid of your house. I mean, it works, right? If your spouse is giving you pain, just leave them. Your house is giving you pain, burn it down. Your car's not working, just leave it on the side of the road. So it's a problem. You don't have a broken car, but you don't have any car. That's the difficulty. You've lost everything. So we want to find out, where is this? Because we have a natural tendency to become attached. Where could we become attached where we'll be satisfied? And Krishna's saying, manashakta manapratha. Make your mind attached to me. Make your mind attached to me. And Krishna's saying, I can protect you. I can take care of you. And he actually can. That's our real relationship. Then we don't have this grief and anxiety and fear and disappointment and, you know, lamentation. And not only that, not only do we not have the grief and fear and lamentation and disappointment, but we also don't have any rebirth again because we're not attached to anything in this world. Now, it's nice you were putting your finger on what do we mean by material attachment. It doesn't just mean it being attached to another living being or being attached to a thing or being attached to this body. But it really means being attached to having myself as the center. That's really what we really mean by a material attachment. I mean, a spiritual person may still take care of their shoes. But they're not thinking, these are my shoes for my enjoyment. And that's a very subtle difference. I mean, anybody, at least for a while, can get rid of their house and their shoes and their watch and live in the street. You know, anybody can do that, at least for a little while. But what's very difficult is getting rid of this idea that it's all about me. And this is very hard to say, but pretty much the so-called love and attachment we have to others is really an attachment to ourselves.
Yes.
And it's very hard to say this, but that's the reality. I'm really thinking, how much can this body please me? How much can this mind please me? How much can my family please me? How much can my friends please me? How much can my objects please me? And that's the ultimate reason why everything is frustrating. Not even so much the limitations and inabilities of everything I'm depending on. Even that is not so much the source of my frustration. But the fact that I tried to put myself at the center, which is just completely false. I'm not at the center. I'm not at the center of my family. Can anyone say, oh, my family will all agree I am the center of the family? My family is not the center of Chennai. Chennai is not the center of India. India is not the center of the planet. I'm sorry. That's because America is the center of the planet. The country is not the center of the planet. The planet is not the center of the solar system. Solar system is not the center of the galaxy. This galaxy is not the center of the universe, and the universe isn't even in the center of all of reality. So it's just simply not true. And no one else is agreeing. My body doesn't agree. My mind doesn't agree. My family members don't agree. Everybody else, they don't all think Urmila is the center.
Person is their center.
Everyone is trying to be their own center. You just imagine a performance like this, right? Some of you, maybe you've been in dances or dramas on the stage. Everybody's been in some performance on the stage? Okay, so you see in a performance, everyone has to work together, right?
Even they cannot be the hero.
Everyone cannot, and even the hero has to work with everybody else. Even the hero has to work with effort. It's a joint effort. You see a dance on the stage, even the lead dancer is coordinating. And imagine if every dancer said, no, I'm going to do my own dance. Right? Or every actress says, no, I'm just going to start saying my own lines. I have my own script in my own head, you know. And would it be pleasing? It would be a mess. Or you imagine musicians, right? Each musician says, I'm going to play my own music now. Then it's just noise. The dancers, if everyone is just doing their own dance, so their dance will not be beautiful, and they will bump into the other dancers, they will bump off the stage, they will fall off the stage. It will just be a mess. So that's what this world is about.
Each has their own
Yes. But when we each try to be the center, that is when our attachments to our bodies, our mind, our family, our friends, our possessions become material, and that's when they become disappointment. So it's not even really that the other person has their limitations and that the object has its limitations, which is certainly true. But the real problem is that I'm expecting that everything is there for me. And this is a very hard thing for us to accept. You know, we're thinking, well, I don't know if that's true. And to see it is also, how do I put this, humbling. It's humbling. Because we all like to think of, I'm a nice person, I'm a kind person, I really care about others, I'm not selfish. And one of the things that happens in spiritual life, maybe I shouldn't tell you this, because then you will all leave.
You can risk it.
I risk it. Nobody told me this. If they did, I didn't hear them. One of the things that will happen in spiritual life is you'll start seeing yourself honestly. And you'll see that I am a materialistic person and I'm not really so nice like I think I am. I appreciate it. So, becoming attached to Krishna means becoming attached to the reality. That it's God who's at the center. He's always the most important. He's always at the center. Of course, you know, Krishna likes to put his devotees in the center. Like Arjuna's driving the chariot. Arjuna's the warrior on the chariot. Krishna's driving. Krishna's the chauffeur only. He's just the driver. That's astonishing. He makes the devotees the hero. Right? He's dancing with so many gopis, but each gopi thinks, I am the most special.
Yes. Each thinks she's dancing exclusively.
Each one is thinking, oh, there's so many other billions of gopis, but Krishna's only dancing with me. So just see, Krishna is at the center, but out of affection, he will put us at the center. But when we try to grab the center, we suffer. Such a simple thing. And Krishna's willing to give it to us. And we say, no, I don't want you to give it to me out of affection. I want to be it myself. Doesn't work. So this same process of attachment we have. People say, how do I become attached to Krishna? Prabhupada's answer is, you already know how to become attached to Krishna. You know how to become attached to your phone.
No one taught you that.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody taught you that. Right? When we were 2-3 years old, we knew how to be attached to our toys. We didn't have to learn. We know how to be attached to our husband, to our children, to our mother and father. We know how to be attached to our hair. I remember when I was getting a new driver's license, you know, it says eye color, hair color, and my daughter was there, and I said, can I say brown still, or do I have to say gray? She says, Mommy, you have to say gray. So we know how to be attached to our hair? Yes, we already know. You just take that and be attached like that to Krishna. If you can be attached to some hair, and you see some hair on the ground, if you saw some eyeballs in the surgery ward. So we know how to be attached to our eyeballs. We know how to be attached to our hair. We know how to be attached to a piece of cloth. I remember I heard one man one time, he was saying, oh, it's easy to make a woman happy. You just give her a piece of fabric with some colors on it. So, you know, if you want to. If we know how to do that, so why can't we be attached to Krishna? The same process. Find Krishna fascinating. We find so many things fascinating. Everything in this world is Krishna's energy. So if Krishna's energy is fascinating, why can't Krishna be fascinating? If a piece of cloth, if an ant, if some hairs can be fascinating, why can't Krishna be fascinating? He can. You just simply have to pay attention to him. Like the mother was paying attention to the little toes. If you pay that attention to Krishna, you'll find that he's fascinating. And to make Krishna important. He already is important. Krishna is our very life breath. He's the taste of the water. He's the taste of the water. He's the light of the sun. He's our ability. He's our intelligence. He's already important. There's no question of our existing without Krishna. So it's a question of being conscious of that importance. I mean, to the point that Lord Chaitanya says, Yugaitam Jagat Sarvam Govindam. If you're not with me, the universe appears empty. And Krishna, I depend on you. Instead of depending on my bodily health, my mental abilities, my family, my friends, my government, my home, my car, I depend on Krishna. And I say to Krishna, you can depend on me also. I'll be there for you. That's really the idea of our taking vows.
That's love.
Yes, that's love. That's really the whole concept of saying, okay, starting today I'm going to chant 16 rounds every day. You know, I'm only going to eat vegetarian food. This is really, what are we... What we're really saying is you can depend on me. I'm going to be there for you. That's attachment.
We make so many changes for the person we love.
Oh, exactly.
So wouldn't we make that for the person we love?
Exactly. It's just like, actually, when my daughter got married, so I trained all my children how to cook. But we used to cook, my husband liked just simply dal, rice, chapati, sabji every day, that's all. Every day. I mean, every day. If it was a festival day, it would be puri instead of chapati. And even we'd go to the devotee restaurant, he would order the tali. Same, you know. Other people, they would order lasagna or something, and he would order the tali. So all my children learned how to cook dal, rice, sabji, chapati, puri. Very simple. So when my daughter got married, her husband liked a lot of international food. He liked the Chinese food and Italian food. And yeah, she said, I have to learn how to cook all over again. But yeah, we do that. Or I remember there was one time when my husband said to me, you know, we hardly ever see each other anymore. We're so busy in our lives. So we made an hour every evening that we would just be with each other after work. And he had a habit for many, many years that he would only eat in the evening. He wouldn't eat. He would fast every day and only eat in the evening. Only 8 months a day for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. So I couldn't do that. I wasn't a very good wife. I couldn't follow like Gandhari. But anyway, I said, I cannot do that. He said, that's okay. So I would serve him his meal in the evening, and we would just be together, nothing else. No other business. So, I can depend on you, Krishna, you can depend on me. That is, you know, I'm going to sit down and chant japa every day. I'm going to spend time with you, Krishna. I'm going to read about you every day. I'm going to cook what you like to eat. I'm going to be there, I'll be there for you. So that's, it's really three things like that. I find you fascinating, which means you have to think about them. You can't find someone fascinating if you don't think about them. If instead of thinking about Krishna, we're thinking about some movie star. You know? I don't know who your, I'm sorry, I don't know who your Indian movie stars are. Please excuse me. I don't even know most of the American movie stars, so I have to speak of the Indian movie stars. Trying to think what American movie stars are. Anyway, if you're thinking, you know, some sports person, some movie star, some singer, but instead think about Krishna.
Rather than just ourselves.
Huh?
We just think about ourselves.
Oh, often we just think about ourselves.
All we do is,
what am I doing? What did I do yesterday? What will I do tomorrow? So find Krishna fascinating. Find Krishna fascinating. Make him most important. He already is the most important. Make him the most important, but you cannot live without him. Not an extra. Most people, they have religion as an extra. You know, they have their family, they have their work, they have their hobby, they have the this, they have the that, and then they have their religion.
They also postpone it. I'll wait till I'm 40 or 50.
Yeah. After I finish everything else. First I'll buy everything I want, then I'll give some money to God. First I'll finish all my other duties, then if I have time, then I'll spend some time with God. Yeah, or when I'm older, after I finish, when I'm retired. And that we depend on Krishna. When there's danger, when there's need, when there's sorrow, when there's grief, we go to Krishna. We don't just lean on, you know, our family and friends or our own ability. And Krishna can depend on us, that we are there for him. Not that he needs us, but he likes us. He likes us. So that is what is meant by attachment. And then the way that we do this, Prabhupada speaking on this verse, we talk about Madashraya. We talked about Madashraya in the terms of Krishna is my shelter. I depend on him. But Prabhupada also makes the point that we cannot take shelter of Krishna unless we also take shelter of the devotees who take shelter of Krishna. Now this is a very delicate point because the devotees are also jivas. They're also living entities. And therefore, the devotees, in one sense, are incapable of being a complete shelter. Srila Prabhupada would say that if a guru says, I am your friend, then he's a cheater. But if the guru says, Krishna's your friend, then the guru also becomes your friend. So if the guru says, no, I am your friend. Hare Krishna. If the guru says, yes, I am your friend, then they're saying they're God. That is true. But when the guru says, here is Krishna, your best friend, then the guru becomes also your friend. And what's very interesting is although by themselves, the devotees are definitely insufficient. Undoubtedly. Another living entity by themselves is insufficient. But someone who's connected to Krishna is a shelter because they're connected to Krishna, not on their own. And this is, again, very subtle. You know, some people, they try to take shelter of the devotees in the same way that people take shelter of family and friends. And if you do that, I guarantee you will suffer. Many, many people come to our Hare Krishna movement and they hear you should take shelter of the devotees. And so they deal with the devotees with the same mentality and in the same way that a person in the world takes shelter of family and friends. And then they realize, wait a minute, these people are also insufficient. They're also incapable. I thought they were a real shelter. Now I've been cheated.
All they did was transfer the attachment.
Yes, in the same way.
Yeah.
It's exactly like someone, I don't like this husband, now I like this husband, now I like this husband, now I like this husband. So there's a certain way of taking shelter of the devotees. You take care of shelter of the devotees as the via media to Krishna, not independent of Krishna. Prabhupada talks about this in the prayers of Queen Kunti in the first chapter, first canto of Bhagavad Gita, where she says, sever my tie of affection to my family members. And her family members were all great devotees. And Prabhupada says, seeing in the darkness is not seeing, but seeing in the sunlight is seeing. He said, when Krishna is the intermediary, then there can be real attachment between souls. So in the spiritual world, everybody is attached to everybody else through Krishna, through the via media of Krishna. And then our relationship with other beings, they can be a kind of shelter for us because they are giving us the real shelter. Okay? I'm not your house, but I can give you keys to the house, like that. Right? So then the devotees become the real shelter. And then being with the devotees is just a wonderful experience. Just absolutely wonderful experience. Beyond any experience of being with anyone in this world. And in fact, everything in this world becomes a wonderful experience. Once you're no longer trying to take from your body, from your mind, from other people and from things for yourself, once they're no longer your shelter, once they're just simply connecting you with Krishna, then the whole world is a wonderful place, truly a wonderful place. then it's no longer a place of suffering. Dukkhalayam Shastratam, Krishna says, but that's for one who's in materialistic consciousness. For one who's in spiritual consciousness, he says, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, Asochatina Vachita. That one gets great and unlimited joy. So this is one of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, ending with Chachchunu, that one should hear. Because without hearing about Krishna, how are you going to become fascinated by him? Without hearing about Krishna, how will he be important to you? Without hearing about Krishna, how will you learn to depend on him? So Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, I believe more often than any other verse. And you could say this is the beginning of the six chapters on Bhakti Yoga, and you could say that this is a verse that really encapsulates what is Bhakti Yoga, what does it mean? Have your mind, have your consciousness attached to Krishna by taking shelter of him and hearing about him. And then what will be the result? You will know him without any doubt. You'll actually experience, and I'll say this again in the ninth chapter. Ninth and seventh are they're almost parallel. Where he says, Pratyakshavagamam Dharma. You'll actually experience Krishna. This won't be some theoretical, philosophical knowledge. If Krishna consciousness is saying to you as a very nice, coherent, cohesive philosophy, you need to go beyond that and have it become more and more of an experience. So knowing something free from doubt means you're actually experiencing. So of course we'll not be completely free from doubt until we're completely experiencing it. There's degrees. But our doubt should be erased due to our own experience. Not simply that we have faith in someone else's experience, but that we are having our own spiritual experience. So what do we do now? Front of the room person.
I guess that's a manufacturing defect.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm also a front of the room person. You know, there's a famous star, Julia Roberts, and she says she's become a Hindu. And she said, I'm tired of being in the front of the room. She said, next life I want to be just quiet in the back of the room. But then you get another life. What is the point of that? So whether you're front of the room person or back of the room person, just use it for Krishna.
She probably said it because she's so sure she's coming back.
Maybe. Anyway, it doesn't matter. If you're an outgoing person, be outgoing for Krishna. If you're a reserved person, be reserved for Krishna. If you're reserved, don't think, oh, I have to become outgoing.
Yeah.
If you're outgoing, don't think I have to become reserved. Then just another life so you can try that one. And I'm sure we've all tried everything.
Yeah.
I'm sure all of us have been reserved persons and all of us have been outgoing persons.
Yes.
We have all been men, we have all been women, we have all been from different planets, different nationalities, everything. We've tried that.
It's very reassuring to hear you say that, because when I say that to people, they sometimes don't connect. Like, when someone says that, they don't think about it. They don't think about their life situation. When I say that, it's probably... this arises because you're constantly identifying yourself with your form. I'm a woman. And these are the things that complete me as a woman. So you're just constantly looking to gratify that aspect of yourself. And at the soul level, we are neither man nor woman, and yet we are both. They think I've lost it. It's most of them.
Yeah. That's the first price that you will pay in spiritual life. Prabhupada talks in this purport about stages of spiritual life. So the first stage can be just a general faith. This is people who just say, I believe in God. They're not doing anything. Like, if here's the material path, here's the spiritual path. So the people who are just saying, I believe in God, they kind of look at the spiritual path, but they're not doing it. Just, I believe. Then the first step, you're not really on the spiritual path yet, but you're just like taking a step. is when you start changing your friends. And not only do you start changing your friends, some of your friends will also change and drop you. Yes. So even if you don't drop friends, some of them will drop you.
Reactions you get from you just become so bored.
Yeah.
You're not fun anymore.
Yeah.
I said define fun.
Yeah. I mean, I remember being in college and talking philosophy, and one of my friends says, "All right, that's interesting. Let's go get some pizza." You know, it's. So yeah, that's the second stage, is you start changing your friends. You start getting friends who are more spiritually inclined, and either you drop some friends or they drop you. And sometimes it's family members.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the first price. And almost everybody has to pay that price. Very rare that a person comes to spiritual life and doesn't lose at least one relationship or have one relationship change. That's very rare. Yes. And, you know, if you don't want to pay that price, then you go back to just, I believe in God. But that is the first price.
I know is...
Yeah.
That is great.
That's the doorway. That's the ticket for just walking in the door. After a while, that doesn't matter anymore. I mean, to me now in my life, that is completely irrelevant. But there was a time when that was very important, and I was really upset about it. It's like a different life. That I worried about that kind of thing. But yeah, Krishna says what's night for the self-realized is day for the ordinary person, and what's night for the ordinary person is day for the self-realized. And, you know, you find when you get into spiritual life that other people's conversations and activities seem really petty. Or even nasty. But at least petty. And foolish.
How do we get to telling them that without getting into a judgmental space? Because more often than not...
Well, first of all, it may not be your job to tell everybody that.
But when it is directly, when it concerns your inner circle, people with whom you interact on a daily basis, it could be anybody. It could be your immediate family, caretakers, anybody.
I very rarely tell people that anymore. When I first started Krishna consciousness, I thought it was my duty to tell everybody. And that didn't work very well. It really didn't work very well. It worked sometimes. Sometimes. Oh, no, I wouldn't say never. Sometimes. But very rarely. Very rarely. You can try. You can try a little bit carefully. And if you get a good response, because sometimes people are actually open. But mostly, people just get very offended.
They're just part of these repetitive patterns, and it's not taking them forward. While I can say, okay, that's
I don't know how much to tell you guys. Basically, when someone's under the control of the material modes of nature, they're like a puppet of the modes. There's something like a person under a drug. Or like when someone's watching a TV show or a movie, they're being swept away by the emotions and the thoughts that the director and producer and actors want them to have. They're not really having their own thoughts.
They're just identifying.
They're identifying with the character.
They get influenced to that and they behave in such a way that how to cope up that situation. You're supposed to stay with them.
Yeah, well,
that's my guess.
First understand what they're going through. It's basically anybody who's under the material modes. They're identifying with something that they're not. Exactly the way that when we're reading a book or watching a movie or TV show, we're identifying with a character that we're not. And we're feeling the emotions and thoughts and anxieties of that character as our own. And we're being basically manipulated by whoever's telling the story. And that becomes our story. And if someone's like that, they'll get really annoyed if you tell them, hey, that's not real. They'll be upset about that. If you go to someone watching a TV show, you know, soap opera even, and you say, this is just petty and foolish, and this has nothing to do with you, but became angry with you.
I think I get what you're saying. This, I mean, at some level, you're saying that we all carry our stories in our head, and we are constantly trying to live out those stories and identifying ourselves as the characters of those stories, and constantly that is what the whole concept of evolution is about. I think.
And when somebody is identifying with these stories, which are not real, they're not real. They're not real. They're not who we are.
So this is my story, the story of my life. It's just a figment of our own imagination.
It's not real. It's like children playing a game.
It's amazing.
And I'm in this and I'm in that.
It's just make-believe.
It's just make-believe. It's real in that it's happening, but it's not real. It's not the reality.
It's a dream world.
It's a dream world. Yes. I mean, the movie is real. It's something. But it's not what you think it is. It's just three colored lights playing on a screen.
It's just a piece of plastic.
It's a piece of plastic and
a white screen.
with some colored lights. And even if you say it's the actors are not who they pretend to be either.
Yeah.
And many times it's not even the actor, it's a body double or something.
Yeah.
Or it's some computer-generated...
Yes.
Thing. So it's real in the sense that it exists, but it's not real in the sense that it's something other than what it looks like it is.
It's only real because our senses perceive
this as real. Or the same, you know, if someone's playing a computer game and they're thinking this is my character.
Role-playing
game. And what is it? It's real, but it's not reality. They're not that character. It's something. It's ones and zeros in the computer program.
It's just a relative truth in that.
Yes. So if somebody wants to be absorbed like that, and you say to them, ahem. Excuse me. You're not that character. This is just a computer game. It's just ones and zeros, my dear friend. It's just electricity. It's just a piece of plastic. It's not you. You have another identity. Hey, I'm trying to play my game. Leave me alone. So, unfortunately, most people, Krishna will say that in this chapter, Manushyam Sahasri Tukachitavisadeva, out of thousands of people, only one is even interested. And out of thousands who are interested, only one finds. So, most people just leave them alone. We have a very nice process in Krishna consciousness, where we can gradually give people the qualification for understanding without them being aware of it and without confronting it. Mostly through prasadam. Through prasadam, through the holy name. So I had, one of my sisters was very antagonistic to Krishna consciousness. I mean, very, 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 very antagonistic. When I joined the movement, she stopped speaking to me. And we had been very close. And then her oldest son died, and then I called her to offer my condolences, and that started a little crack. But then, even then, most of our conversations were she was criticizing me. So then she was diagnosed with cancer, and she saw me right after the diagnosis. She met with me one time. And then at the end, when she knew there's no more treatment, nothing more she could do, she invited me to her house. She had not invited me to her house. I wasn't even allowed in her house. But this was 3 weeks before she was going to die. She said, all right, you can come to my house. I came with my mother and my other sister. So I was thinking, what can I do for my sister? Because I didn't go in a sari and tila. She wouldn't have let me in the house like that. And she wouldn't have eaten prasadam. There was no way I could give her prasadam. I mean, I put a little Jamuna Radhakun water into her water. But then I thought, and I can't chant to her. So I thought, oh, my children have names of Krishna. So I'll talk about my children. So, you know, I was saying, my oldest son, now he's initiated, his name's Murari, but his name was Madhava. So Madhava did this, Jamuna did this, Kesha did this, and I kept talking about my children. And when we left, my mother said, you don't usually talk so much about your children. And then also what Prabhupada told me in 1974, my father was there meeting with Prabhupada, and he said, I'm not coming to the temple to see Krishna, I'm coming to see my daughter and son-in-law. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, they are loving Krishna, and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So the things we can do for people, you can try a little bit, and if they're open, then you can actually give them a book. And some people will be open. And most people, if they're not open, then you can give them prasadam. You could say the holy names around them. And you can be yourself. This is the hardest thing. You can be yourself an example of a devotee.
Yeah. Actually, you want to change it because you want to change yourself.
And then if they like you, I mean, I remember my mother, for the first 10 years I was practicing Krishna consciousness, she was very negative. First 8 years, very, very negative. I mean, one time my husband even said to her, I don't think you should come to our home. And she said, why? She said, because you want my wife to leave this movement and leave her husband and leave her son. And she said, nobody wants her to leave her son. So that was how negative she was. Then for another 2 years, she was a little bit negative. And she told me, she said, I've changed my mind because I see your children are so nice. And also with me, because my sister, the one who died of cancer, she became also very religious. But she became very fanatic religious. Because I was raised Jewish, and my mother always said, if you want to be religious, why don't you be a religious Jew? Why do you have to be a religious something else? So my sister did that. She became a religious Jew. And then she became very fanatic. And she was criticizing my mother.
Always biting.
That my mother wasn't strict enough. She said, you know, she told my mother, I don't want you coming to my house. She said, why? She said, I don't want my daughter to see that a Jewish woman is wearing pants. And then my mother said to me, she said, you know, you're nicer than your sister. So she started to change. You know, but that means you have to be nice. So I think that's the hardest thing. Many times in the name of Krishna consciousness, we're nasty. We may use our Krishna consciousness to criticize other people. Use our Krishna consciousness to try to manipulate and control other people. It's bad enough to do that, but if you do it in the name of Krishna... So the main thing we can do with people, if you have to live with them, you have to interact with them all the time,
to be accommodating,
is to personify real Krishna consciousness, not just in your externals, not just, okay, I'm only eating vegetarian food and I'm chanting japa, but in your behavior, in your character. And then they'll think after a while, oh, you really became nice. And, you know, some people are so evil that they'll hate you the more you're saintly. That may happen, too.
This is what they purpose, too. Just as concerned.
Yes, they do. But that happens sometimes, too. Just like Ravana hated Vibhishan, and Hiranyakashipu hated Prahlad. So that may sometimes happen. That's not usually the case, but... Sometimes there's someone in your life who's so evil that the more you become saintly, the more they hate you. That does happen. Not often, but sometimes. Sometimes.
Imagine if they hate you enough to be indifferent.
Generally.
So do we have to quiet when someone talks negatively?
It depends who they are and what the situation is.
Family.
It depends. I remember one time when my father had a heart attack. My stepmother called me. She said he's had a heart attack. And I said, okay, well, I want to come. And she said, my father was always very interested in Krishna consciousness. He was a life member. He met Prabhupada many times. But my stepmother was not. And she said, you can come visit, but I will not make any arrangements for you at all. So, you know, I get there, and I remember one time I was trying to offer some food. There was no food in the house, basically. I couldn't even eat. I got some dried pineapples and some pistachio nuts, and I put them on a paper plate, and I was making an offering, and she comes and starts eating off the plate. I'm like, Krishna, can you please eat this anyway, because I don't have anything else. So then she was a widow, so she had two children from her first marriage, and her son was there. So she said, today we're going to go eat at a restaurant, and you're going to have to come with us, because we're going to stop there on the way to the hospital, so you have to come. And she said, what restaurant should we go to? I said, are there any vegetarian restaurants? She says, no. This was before internet, so I couldn't look myself. I'm sure there were some vegetarian restaurants. I said, are there any Indian restaurants? No. I said, any like organic, natural food restaurants? No. I said, are there any restaurants that serve a lot of salads? Oh, yes, there's a restaurant like that. So we go to this restaurant, and it's what they call a sports bar. So they have big screens with sporting events, and they're serving a lot of alcohol. So they had 15 salads, but they were all meat salads. All of them. There was a tuna fish salad, a chicken salad, a shrimp salad. So finally I asked the waitress, I said, can you give me lettuce, tomato, a piece of lemon, and some olive oils? And that's what I ate. So I'm sitting there with that, and she's talking to her son, and they're sitting across from me, and they're talking about how they don't like religious people.
You had something to do with the choice of topic.
So I'm eating my lettuce and tomato with olive oil on it. And they're having their whole meal. For 20 minutes I was silent. And then finally I looked at them and I said, I'm sitting here. Oh no, it's not about you.
It's not about you.
No, it's not about you. What can you do? What I found is that those situations really helped me to solidify my own faith and determination. Because when I looked at people like that, whether they were family members or people at work, and I just said, I am so glad I am not like that. I am so glad that I have been saved and I don't have this kind of life. You know, it really, if I ever had any doubts or any difficulty or whatever struggles, and then I look, their lives are empty, just empty. There's nothing in them. All they think about is their bodies and their families and their home and their car. And what is the difference between that and a rabbit thinking about its hole and its family? I mean, just empty, empty, empty lives.
But in the normal world out there, these are the values which are very highly priced. I mean, if you marry a man who's always thinking of what to do for his own house, his family, and how to hold on to that job and go to the gym and get those.
And then those people who say, when they get everything, they say, is that all there is?
Yeah, they say it's not enough. It's never enough.
It's never enough. What do they say? Everybody always wants 10% more money than they have.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how much you have. If you had 10 billion, you'd want, you know.
You'd never be too rich or too thin.
No. And if those things made for a happy life, then 100% or at least 90% of people who had those things would be happy. And that's not true.
Yeah.
Every day in the newspaper you read about some rich, famous, beautiful, powerful person who committed suicide or is addicted to drugs. Or if those things made for a happy life, then that wouldn't be the case.
But there is this mass conditioning there. It starts right from our education system.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's a fake map. How to get success and happiness? Follow this map. You follow this map, and you don't feel happy at the end. You have the beautiful house, and you have the three cars, and you have the attractive spouse, and your children go to the best schools, and you have a BMW in your garage, and a big flat screen TV, and maybe you even have a dog. And you look around, and you say, "Is that all there is?" Is that it? Because it's not real. It's just a computer game. It's just a film. It's just a book. It's just a dream. It's not real. If you win everything in the computer game, then you're not going to feel satisfied. Anyway, as far as association with people like that, I find compassion, a lot of compassion. You can help them by giving them prasadam, by having them hear the holy name, and by being yourself a good example of a devotee. And also learn from them to look at their lives and say, would I want that? Would I really want that? It's just empty. I mean, for me, if I have any doubts about spiritual life, just to associate with materialistic people for 5 minutes is enough. It's just like, whatever difficulty I have to go through to become a devotee, it's worth it. These people are going through just as much difficulty. But what do they have at the end? They have nothing. They have nothing. Yeah, it's very sad. So you can use it like that.
How we can make to understand them?
What did you say to this one, Namaskar?
So this one, they cannot understand that. They know Krishna is supreme, all that one they know, but they won't accept that one, realize that one. How we can make to understand that?
You can't make anybody do anything. You can't even make yourself.
They know all that.
Can you make yourself do something? Can you make yourself do something? No, but I'm asking you, can you make yourself do something?
Something that you don't accept your knowledge. Like, can you jump off this?
Can you force yourself?
Yeah.
Or even, you know, okay, now I'm going to be humble. Can you do that?
No.
So how are you going to make them? What you want to do is you want to add to their spiritual bank account. The reason people don't take a step is they don't have enough faith. Their attachment and their faith is misplaced. So you can increase their spiritual credit. You can increase their spiritual strength by giving them prasadam, by letting them hear the holy name, and by letting them become attached to you if you're a devotee. Those three things you can do. You can also sometimes engage them in some service. Sometimes they can do service for you that's really service for Krishna. Like my husband and I were running a school. My mother gave money to the school, but she gave it really to her daughter. But she was giving it to Krishna. So you can, and in that way you will increase their ability. But you can't make somebody. You can try. Good luck. But the other you can do. You can increase their spiritual bank balance. Unless they're really evil.
Most of the different things we show things patience.
That's because they're trained like that, like you're saying. They're trained like that from a young age in modern society. They're trained that spirituality and religion is foolishness. That only the material is real. It's very strong, systematic training.
It starts very early.
Very, very early. By the media, especially the media.
He says, you prove that God is there, then I'm willing, I need to believe. But I need this thing, he says.
How do you prove that God is there? It's very easy to prove that God is there. That's so easy. That's not difficult. It's just like, did somebody make this or did it just appear? So if somebody had to make this, even this face, that's a very simple face. It's not very complicated. Look at those eyes. They're very, very simple. They're just dots. But we know that they're eyes. We can understand these are eyes, even though they're very, very simple. And we can understand that whoever did this had some intelligence. This was not done by a monkey. And it was not done even by a 2-year-old child. Had to be done at least, to make this, you'd have to probably be at least 10 years old to make this. So what to speak of my eye? Now, I don't have to see who made this. I don't have to meet that person. I don't have to know their name to know that some some intelligent being had to have designed this. It's not that I have to meet them. This is very simple. I mean, you take very, very simple things. Like even this bookmark here. There's this little piece of cloth. It's extremely simple. It's not complicated at all. But any archaeologist would know this was made by intelligent human beings. This didn't come about by chance. I don't have to meet the person who made this to know that, to have proof. So why not whoever made my skin, which is so much more complex and is self-repairing?
He's a doctor, he uses his medical brain and he argues with me.
But what is the argument for that? There is no argument for that.
Who controls the brain?
Yeah, but there's no argument for that.
He's asking to stop his mental disorder.
But anyway, there's no argument for that. There's only one logical argument against the existence of God. Only one. The only logical arguments against the existence of God is, why is there evil and suffering in the world? That's the only one. And that's really an argument, is God nice or not nice? But that somebody must have designed everything and somebody must be controlling everything. There's no argument against that.
That there is a superior power is a given.
There's no logical argument against that. How can the planets be going? You can predict 1,000 years in advance where Venus is going to be in the sky. Can you predict even 1 hour in advance where an Air India jet is going to be in the sky? No. You can predict exactly where Venus is going to be in 1,000 years. And you'll be right. If you write it down now, somebody 1,000 years from now, they'll see it and they'll be right. But can you do that with anything else? So how much intelligence must there be? If there has to be intelligence to control airplanes and cars, there's no intelligence to control planets. So there's absolutely no argument against the existence of God. None. The only argument is, then why is there suffering? If there's a creator, why is there suffering? Yes. Is that all right? As someone who can't understand that, there's not even any use in having a discussion. If someone can't understand that because we know there's a creator for this, there must be a creator for this. And because there must be a creator for this, there must be a creator for this. If they can't understand that, then there's no point in any further discussion. It's just useless. Is that all right? Okay, we need to stop. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
That was the end.